Hey, how's it going, everyone? Joel here from the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast. Right now, you are listening to actually the first ever episode of the original podcast that was done back in September of 2016. We had Jacob Bannon show up. They're playing, Converge is playing a local music festival here in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we invited local bands and surrounding people in Raleigh to come to the shop and ask some questions. So let's go ahead and let's get into this old archived episode.
All right, we are here at Holy Mountain Printing in North Carolina, and we've got Converge with us. Everybody make some noise for these guys. All right. We're very happy to have Jacob and Nate in the house right now. And guys, thanks so much for being here in North Carolina. And
thank you for having us.
Thank you for being again. Yeah, we know you just are. I was just talking to Nate a little bit before we got started about the festival circuit you've been doing. You did Psycho Vegas and Riot Fest, and now you're in town for our local festival, Hopscotch. And Nate, I know you played here before with Old Man Gloom, so thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Glad the festival treated you well enough to want to come back. You know,
yeah, I was pretty excited.
That's great. To get the offer again. And I know we chatted a bit about Psycho Las Vegas. I was just wondering if there was ever any, was there any like kind of standout good times that you guys could reflect on from those recent festivals between that or Riot Fest? Any cool stories to share? Or was it just kind of a...
We saw the Misfits.
We saw the Misfits the other day.
That's pretty incredible.
That was pretty cool.
That's big news to me.
I was like 400 yards away.
I was 405 yards away.
Yeah.
It was, it was huge. I mean, if you told me that, I don't know, when I was 12 years old or something, or 11, or ever, that we'd be playing a show, our band, I'd have a band who would be playing a show with the Misfits, a concert, but
absolutely,
that wasn't a show.
That was a concert event.
There was 20,000 people there.
That is certainly something to be proud of.
Not for us at all.
There were like 80 people there for us.
Yeah, but for them, it was bananas to see, and it was really crazy to see that, you know, a punk band that, you know, it's just, I don't know, just that popular, you know, that has been, that was or wasn't around, depending on who you ask, for 40 years, you know.
It's like, yeah, they were like, or at least that iteration of the band was broken up for so long that, like, it was almost like a personal thing listening to their records. You know, maybe the other punk kids or the other skaters in your neighborhood knew who they were, but you never really had any... Really?
Yeah, they were like, you know, because I was a fan as well in high school, and they were like one of those bands where if they liked them as well, then like you were instantly friends with that guy, you know. I'd imagine you guys' music is like that for a lot of people as well, so it'd have been a good feeling to be playing that fest with them.
You need new friends.
Yeah, it was cool being in the audience and like seeing how many people really...
Exactly.
Like, all the whoa parts, like, 20,000 people singing, it's like, holy shit, this is crazy.
It's pretty universal music. And of course, there's legendary stories about the bitterness between those guys throughout the years.
Yeah.
And they've gotten over that. You know, they're out there playing again.
Yeah,
you know, that's got to be inspiring.
I hope it sticks.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that was really cool. Psycho Vegas was really interesting too. We got to play with a lot of bands that we don't normally get to play with, like Yob, Woven Hand.
Drive Like Jehu. They stand out for me.
Yeah, I got to catch their set. That was my first time seeing them. I remember them well, of course.
How angry were you at the people that weren't in the room when they played?
It was pretty baffling, you know. Yeah. That was actually one question I had about that particular fest, because I don't want to say, you know, bands like you guys or Drive Like Jehu were kind of outliers, but it was, you know,
completely.
It was an interesting mix, you know.
We and
it's, yeah, yeah. For sure.
I mean, I think that if you're a fan of heavy music, then it makes sense.
Absolutely. You know?
But if you're like a metal dude, you're like, what are these guys doing here?
You know, you got the guys who are the fans of like the Sabbath-y riffs and you know, that sort of thing, and then you have the sort of angular hardcore style singing. You know, it's strange because it makes sense to some people. You know, that sort of thing just kind of like just goes across the fan base. But you know, then you have the folks who just are like, scratch their head and wonder what's going on.
Yeah. Budo Spin was the other standout for me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge
Elder
fan of those
as
guys.
Well.
Oh, yeah, Elder.
Elder were great as well.
Kicking myself for missing their set. I was running some merch for some friends when they played, but...
Bummer.
Yeah. Another time. Yeah, because they're from you guys' area as well, right?
Yeah.
Massachusetts guys.
Yeah. New Bedford?
New Bedford. Excellent. Yeah, and speaking of like, you know, how, you know, the so-called genres get mixed up and everything kind of gets sub-genred out right now, one thing that I think is... you know, that people embrace about Converge is the fact that you just can't put your finger on how you guys sound. You know, there's shitty elements of, yeah, sorry to bring that to you.
A little shitty. it's weird. And it's dynamic, you know. So yeah. It's a bunch of stuff in a blender.
Yeah. You know, it's got the hardcore crowd that likes you guys, the metal crowd. And,
well, I think when you're looking at aggressive music in 2016 and trying to break things down and categorize them by, you know, subgenre and whatever, it's a losing battle. You know, there's always going to be somebody that's going to be an outlier. There's always going to be something that some sort of ingredient that makes a band unique that also allows them to sort of like fall out of the, you know, the way to sort of, you know, popularly define them. So
yeah, there's too many rules.
Well, I mean, who makes them?
Exactly. It's just
usually it's writers or people that, you know, want to just sort of simplify talking about a band. You know, yeah. You don't really talk about a band's character or their, you know, unique identity if you just say they're a hardcore band or they're a metal band. You're just kind of like giving them a middle finger a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. What I really liked about you guys when I first heard you is I lived in Richmond, Virginia for a little while, and there was like a lot of bands who really stretched the boundaries of like what you could do with heavy music and heavy riffing too. And, you know, I hate to use the word math rock or, you know, mathcore, which I think has been used to describe you guys a lot too. But that just sort of a sound you guys had in mind when you first started writing music? Just like, we're going to stretch rhythms and stretch the sound? Or
initially when we started, we just wanted to just have fun, and we were still essentially the same way. When we started getting more serious and getting more technically proficient, I think there was a period where Kurt probably wanted to be a little more technical than anybody, and that was just because he was learning how to play in front of people and, you know, getting better and hearing all these, you know, other bands, and kind of wanted to make things technical. But over time we stripped those things down, I think became a little more refined. When people say that we're like a mathy or technical band, I tend to disagree, because a lot of stuff is actually pretty simple. It's not simply executed, but the just like a lot of basic rock songs are simple, but like the subtle nuances that make them have like a certain swagger or swing can't really be replicated really that easily.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, overall, I feel like once we kind of realized we were able to do what we wanted to do, like make our instruments do what we wanted them to do, I think we got much more focused on just writing good songs as opposed to trying to come up with the craziest riff or whatever. It's funny you bring up Richmond and math rock, because Breadwinner is one of my favorite bands.
Oh, the Breadwinner is an excellent band. Yeah, I remember those guys. I never got to see them because I was a little young at the time, but Penn Rollins, to this day, is still a legendary name in Richmond, you know. Definitely. A lot of great bands that kind of started out of that scene there. Yeah, so it's great to see you guys kind of stretching, you know, boundaries of, like, rhythms and riffing and that sort of thing. It's obviously not something that you're trying to pigeonhole yourselves with, and, you know, it's seems like your sound is still kind of evolving a lot, too, you know. It's, you guys...
We're all just fans of music, you know.
Yeah, like it's pretty simple.
Yeah, we all just still listen to a lot of music, and, that's probably what drives us the most, is just, you know, wanting to make music we want to hear.
Yeah.
I love getting excited about a record or a band now, you know, at almost 40, you know, and hear something that makes me go, wow, this is actually legitimately interesting. I want to listen to heavy music today as opposed to NPR.
Exactly.
You know,
I would take that option as well.
Yeah, it takes a bit to kind of, you know, I've heard a lot of stuff, so it takes a bit to sort of, you know, shake the dust off sometimes, you know. But yeah, there's still interesting things happening.
Yeah, okay. It's funny. I'm not talking about anybody in particular, but I feel like when some people that are into hardcore metal, especially in bands, as they begin to age a little bit, they stop seeking out new music.
Right.
And I don't know. I never lost that hunger. Like, I'm constantly searching for new stuff. And I think that is a big part of all of our musical identities. We're looking for stuff to rip off.
Yeah.
Well, you know, also Kurt is an engineer.
They always say great artists steal. So,
well, I mean, everybody does in some way. I mean, nothing is wholly original, you know. That's true. It's just all about how you sort of present it and, you know, what your sort of unique voice is in them, you know.
Absolutely. And you guys are, you know, telling me about how much you love music and just like you like different things. I was, one of my questions was, back in the early days, do you guys remember a particular record or a particular performance that just, a lot of bands just have that moment where something just lit their world on fire and they just, it made them kind of want to do what they do. Do you guys remember what that show or that record was for you guys? And you can answer individually, of course.
I mean, we were really fortunate enough to come up as listeners, as a lot of you guys here and ladies here are of bands, like at a really a golden time for heavy music where, you know, like, I don't know. I just went to a random show in a snowstorm and I saw Burn's first show out of New York, you know, with Agnostic Front, Wrecking Crew and Sick of It All in front of like 200 people. And it was like the craziest thing in the world. All the times I saw all those New York hardcore bands like blow my doors off, seeing Leeway at their prime, seeing the Cro-Mags at their... Yeah, like all that stuff was huge. Seeing Typo Negative come to Boston on a demo opening for Biohazard and Sheer Terror. Seeing Life of Agony come out with keyboards opening for all of them. You know, like before anybody was really being experimental like that, you know. And so you're just a bunch of like bunch of random hardcore kids. You show up at a show and you're like, okay, what's going to happen? And then you're like, what the fuck is that guy doing? Why is that guy, you know, setting up a keyboard, and why is he, you know, singing almost like a sort of like a suave Elvis? Like what's going on right now? It's like totally crazy seeing that stuff. And then seeing like, Boston was just really fortunate to have that proximity to New Jersey and New York and have a lot of those bands come. We also had, you know, a lot of tours come through at the time too. You know, seeing Neurosis early and seeing that band evolve. The first time I saw them was on the Word Is Law tour. And they were like, this razor sharp punk band, you know, but they were still something.
Actually, I saw them on Souls at Zero the first time.
Okay. But I actually didn't see them on Souls at Zero. I saw that.
They were crushing, man.
And then I saw them on Enemy of the Sun tour, and they were like a whole new animal. And it was just so invigorating to see Buzz Oven at the peak of their powers, you know.
I mean, like,
just so much stuff, you know.
There was tons of stuff that I was into, and I saw a bunch of bands that I liked. But I think the first time for me that it hit home, that was, you know, where it was like, hey, I can do that. I grew up in Virginia. For me, it was seeing Avail the first time.
Oh, yes.
And I saw them, and it was just like...
Four Walls for you, too.
On Four Walls Falling. Yeah. But yeah, Avail was the band that was like, holy shit. Like, this...
Yeah, they were an excellent band.
You know, I know these guys. They go to all the same shows I go to, and they're...
One of the guys in Four Walls was actually my realtor at one point in Richmond. He was... we rented from him.
Which one? Taylor or...
It was Taylor's brother,
Bo.
Bo, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So wild.
Thanks for being such a good landlord, Bo.
Nice.
All these years later.
But yeah, like Avail, and then...
I think Avail's actually really important to the history of Converge, whether they know it or not, as far as like...
They set the model. Avail and Neurosis, I feel like, set the model of how to operate as like a touring DIY punk band.
For sure. You know, I did my first U.S. tour, I did with Converge. We played like three or four shows of another band's U.S. tour. In 1994, summer 1994, and that band I just roadied for the rest of the run, but they met up with Avail for like 2 weeks, and so I learned a lot about work ethic from that band. You know, we were doing a tour across the country in like this tiny, like, you know, cargo van that blew up in Las Vegas, and we did the rest of the tour in the back of a Ryder truck where the only way in or out was, you know, just like the big door.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. And Avail were, you know, in their van, they would screen their shirts outside every show. Yep. And,
remember Eric used to bring the camping stove and he'd cook chili
they'd
for cook everybody.
There, yeah. And they just really took care of us, and it just kind of really hit home the sense of community that I sort of like fantasized about, that I wanted to see happen in punk rock and hardcore, that I was learning about through like MRR and like, you know, like early issues of Heart Attack and stuff like that. So, it was just cool to see a band, you know, set those things up. As far as like inspirational musical bands, for me, I have an older brother, and he is like an 80s metal guy, 6 years older than me. He used to play Sabbath covers in the basement of my house. He's a drummer with this guy, Terry, who was the guitarist in Disrupt and Grief, later Grief, and a couple other bands. And so he actually introduced me to the grindcore world and like the real true beginning of like Earache Records and stuff. Like he gave me my copy of like the Terrorizer record on cassette, Warmocked record, like all these like weird, obscure New Red Archives bands. They were just Unseen Terror. They gave me that. So like they introduced me to all this extreme stuff that I would have otherwise never have heard about or known about. So that was also a really big deal.
Yeah. Excellent. Like when you were saying that it was a pretty awesome time for mm-hmm. music, it was like,
so cool.
Say you had like the Earache stuff happening. You had like the AMREP stuff happening.
Oh that, yeah, for sure. The, like the cows, yeah. like yeah. all the weird stuff like that, that was hard to describe or yeah. like pinpoint.
You know, it was kind of at the end of like the glory days of like the late 80s hardcore, but sure. then you had, you know, like Rorschach mm-hmm. and Born Against happening on the West Coast. You had Drive Like Jehu,
mm-hmm.
all the like kind of
Universal Order of Armageddon.
Yeah, but and then you had all like the post Revolution Summer Discord stuff that like it was.
Yeah, was that was actually really... another thing I was going to ask you guys yeah. about was like early 90s Discord. I can hear that in you guys' music. Was that a scene you guys like
huge,
a lot?
Especially yeah. Kurt too. That stuff really pulled Kurt out of listening to like Suicidal and like Power Mad and Violence. Those were like, he was like a more of like a metal guy.
Yeah.
And really gave him a place that was really interesting because he was hearing these weird angular guitar riffs.
Yeah. It's like rethinking everything you knew.
Rethinking everything. Yeah. You're like, whoa, whoa. Like you don't have to play drums like this. You know, you don't have to play guitar, like just straight power chords or chugging. Yeah. Like yeah. it's a whole another animal.
Yeah. And the way Kurt's mind works is he wants to take things apart and completely figure out how do they work.
Yes, 100%. Like, yeah.
And then remake them himself. And so, like, that's exactly what he did.
Speaking yeah. of Kurt, how is it working out with him being your kind of in-house producer? Is he...
It's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Excellent. Not yeah, too much of a slave driver or anything not, like that.
I think now he's more comfortable wearing the, I wouldn't say producer hat. It's almost like a engineer with suggestions.
Yeah.
Where before it was he was a little apprehensive, I think, about that. But he's had so much more experience that he's learned how to talk to us in positive ways. We all have our different ways of working and tracking and things like that. But I mean, he could still say stuff that'll drive you crazy when you're in the middle of tracking.
Why are you doing that? Why yeah. did you do that like that?
You'll punch it. You'll do a song.
You'll be in the middle of something, just like yeah, kill it. Stop. That sucked. Do it again.
Yeah. That's always fuck. A good feeling.
I gotta give more power to the guy. Being an engineer and a guitar player on your own records, I can't even imagine how stressful that'd be.
It's gotta be really stressful. And yeah, especially yeah. being somebody who has a vision of a song that, you know, we've all worked on, but we all still have our individual visions as to how it's gonna sound at the end of the day. And then, you know, we go in and either enhance it or fucking shit on it, depending on what, right. you know, yeah. and like, you know,
completely tear it apart and make something else.
Yeah. And so it's a unique relationship, but no, it's fantastic. Excellent. You know, we're really fortunate. We get to practice in the live room at the studio and we've done that for like a decade or more now in yeah. various locations. And it just makes us a pretty efficient band. You know,
that's very cool. And yeah. this current lineup's been together since the year 2000, right?
Yeah,
pretty much.
A lot has changed since then in terms of like how bands utilize, you know, obviously technology and that kind of thing. You know, the internet was kind of a fledgling thing that bands used around that time in terms of marketing themselves or like getting their music out there to people. Do you guys, it's kind of a generic question to ask, do you prefer it now? But is there anything about those old days that you kind of miss that you feel is not happening right now?
It's a double-edged sword, you know. I think that as a band, and especially this subgenre, if I'm going to say this subgenre, just like heavy black t-shirt, aggressive music. That's you know,
how many black t-shirts are out there? Yeah, right now? See, all of them,
all of us, right? And pretty much, you know, like the thing is, like we've all benefited from that because it allows us to get our music out there. It allows us to connect with other like-minded people and hear about bands we would not necessarily have heard of at a much faster, rapid rate. And as a band, we also really benefited from it because, you know, we started really working hard and touring significantly when the internet was really kind of kicking off. And I think it would be disingenuous to say that we didn't benefit from that, even though, yes, like,
yeah, we totally did.
I would say, I mean, financially, none of our bands benefit from that because we, you know, it's
no
all
one sells records
no one sells anymore. Records, you know, at least in terms of what was sold in, I don't know, maybe the mid-90s by a lot of the metal labels, you know, where like a failing record would have sold 50,000 copies of a, you know, fast death metal
band.
It's
amazing. That's considered a failure, or it was considered a failure.
Well, yeah, or it was like, you know, that's what they expected. They were manufacturing these huge numbers of things and, you know, like on the cheap, you know, like formats like cassette that were costing them, you know, like nothing at the time.
Every now and then I'll talk to someone from that time frame and they're like, yeah, the label dropped us because we only sold 30,000 records. And that's an astronomical.
But you have to remember, like, there was,
well, maybe you shouldn't have spent so much money.
But there were, in a lot of ways, there was no way for you to, especially in, you know, if you weren't part of, like, you know, a band, if you weren't in a band that was doing singles, like the only metal bands that were doing singles were like the Metallicas of the world,
right,
or like, you know, like Seven Inches and stuff like that. You weren't getting heard in a sort of cost effective way by people. So kids were taking risks by going into a mall and buying, you know, like a Sepultura Beneath the Remains on cassette because the cover looks cool. You know, it wasn't, you know, or like seeing it in the back of a magazine, like an ad in like Rip Magazine or Metal Maniacs or something like that. That was how you were connecting with bands. So it was like, it was very different. I miss it only because I grew up in it and I loved that feeling that I got, that excitement that I got when I would open up a metal magazine. I'd see, I talked about this the other day, like I saw a full page ad for Violence, Eternal Nightmare. And I was like, what the fuck is this record?
Right.
This cover looks crazy. I dropped the magazine. I walked to the other side of the mall to Tape World and I bought it. I think it was Tape World or Record Town, one of them. They were all near each other. And I was so excited because the cover looked cool. You know, and it was just like this really cool thing, this like weird treasure hunt that you had to go. Now it's like, you know, point and shoot. You get on your laptop, you get on your phone, you buy a fucking record, you know?
Yes.
When we landed today, I forgot that I didn't pre-order the new Nick Cave record that comes out tomorrow. So I bought it when I landed today, you know? Like, it's a lot easier now to do that. You don't have to hunt things down. There's a plus and minus to it.
Exactly. Yeah, but, you know, like, my gripe with, not with what you're saying, but when a lot of people are like, it was better back then.
It was like, never better, that's for sure.
Like, everything that, you know, people that complain about that say happened then and doesn't happen now is still happening
for
now.
Sure, yeah.
And if anything, there's more of it.
So much more, especially and just demos,
like,
too.
Yeah, I'm like, there's so much music out there. There's, like, every day there's kids discovering punk and hardcore, and now there's a wealth of information about it, and it's like, you know, so some kid that's 14 years old can get the Mental Abuse demo and, like, you know what I mean, and be like, I'm gonna learn how to play hardcore from listening to this, not like the Warzone metal record that the only one that you could get
in you could find that in a bargain bin for like a buck.
Forget the Struggle,
the self-titled was everywhere. That was the Caroline Records one that no one talks about the pink guitars.
So, like, whenever I hear people complaining about that, I'm like, you're just fucking lazy, man. Like, there's so much happening out there. Like,
there's
how do you not see this? How are you not seeing everything that I'm seeing?
If anything,
there's so much good shit happening.
It's difficult to find the time as a listener of, you know, let's call it independent music, right? Because it's really not all aggressive and, you know, yelling in your face. But there's such a deep well of stuff out there, you know, like, it takes a lot for, you know, there's so much shit, like, shaken from the tree all the time, you know?
But that's kind of bullshit.
What?
Because I'm talking about a specific type of
learning how to play hardcore and have the
about a specific type of complaint.
Okay.
And it usually comes from the type of guy who, like, posts some video from YouTube of some show that happened 30 years ago and complain about how things aren't.
I'm friends with some of those guys, unfortunately.
We are definitely friends with them. But and all they do is complain about those, and then they post another one from the, and it's like,
You're clearly on YouTube.
You're clearly on YouTube clicking on the video on the side of the one you just watched.
Related videos, yeah.
Just put a new band in there.
Yeah.
Do the same fucking thing.
It's hard to type.
I know.
It's hard to type.
And it's so hard. It's so hard for those guys to not be like, oh, I heard this before already. This band did this.
We've all heard everything before.
Exactly.
You know, it
I think everyone
matter.
In this room probably knows someone like that personality you're talking about.
I've been that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it you have to make yourself not be that guy.
Right.
And look at it from a different perspective, because there's so much awesome new music happening every day.
I think that's really what makes the difference between somebody who's old in heavy music and not You know, it's like you live in denial of new things that makes you old.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Almost like you feel threatened by it.
Oh, they are 100% threatened by it.
It's just, it's silly.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's very great perspective. And in terms of the music itself and the message that gets out there to people, you know, message is always been a very important thing in hardcore music. And I think that's what a lot of people like about you guys is, you know, our hardcore, of course, was about aggression. But I remember, you know, there was that period where you had bands like Husker Du, where instead of like a lot of external aggression they were expressing against the world around them, it was more internal, like, you know, like a song like What's Going On off the Zen Arcade record. Mm-hmm. They were like kind of looking inside, you know, like how am I coping with the world around me? And it seems like you guys have a lot of that sort of thing going on in your music as well. Is that the sort of like thing you sort of, I don't know if this is more your territory as like the lyricist for the band or?
I mean, it is and isn't. I mean, I think we all sort of share the same general idea and concept of what makes, you know, like a good, powerful song that's a meaningful song. You know, for me, like I've never looked to music to be like a political or moral or ethical compass, you know, like that's, you already should have that shit together. You know, that you can read a book and read newspapers and pay attention to current events to, you know, and get that. Somebody doesn't need me to tell them how to live their life in that regard. You know, like I don't want to tell somebody how to eat, how to think or whatever. I just want to sort of use music to be a vehicle for my personal expression to get all like the bullshit heavy stuff that's in me that I go through in my life that I, you know, have and still do and, right. And find a personal place, you know, a good positive place to get out that personal aggression.
And do you like if somebody like a fan, for example, says that they identify with that it helps them get through their own hard time?
It's not a matter of liking it as much as I feel that that's the whole idea of music. You know, that's why we're all here. You know, if you find these things relatable, you find these visuals, you find these lyrics, you find the sort of volume and intensity of a song relatable. So it's just sort of a byproduct of that. I'm really thankful that people look to our band for that, and I'm really grateful for that. Fuck this fly.
Not grateful for the flies right now.
That's
it's
all right.
It's been a bad summer for them in North Carolina.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's a wonderful thing, but it's not... It's not something that, like, I don't want to see somebody in pain or talk to somebody in pain. It's not something I treasure. Like, I've shown things to Nate before when I've, you know, gotten an email or just talked to somebody for 20 minutes, half hour about something that was really intense in their lives. And it can be heavy for me because right. It can pull you right into that kind of place. You know,
this
but
might
it
be a good time
is.
To ask you about the documentary that was made about you, Rungs and the Ladder.
You guys seen that?
Yeah, that's you shared some really wonderful stories about your past there, about a lot of pain you experienced emotionally
sure.
And of course physically, like when you broke your knee, right?
Yeah, I broke my knee when I was a kid. That was miserable. Yeah.
Yeah. What keeps you going? It sounds like, you know, you've had a lot of pain throughout the years and you express that through the music. I mean, what kind of makes you, and yeah, I've heard you express in other interviews before where your body's in pain a lot when you perform these
sure.
days,
well, so. You know, art's a powerful thing and I think it's a necessary thing. You know, if I would stop making music, visual art, whatever, if I felt like I had nothing else left to express or say or communicate in some way. I still do. You know, I didn't really necessarily think that at a particular age I would start or stop that sort of thing. You know, my angst might be a little bit different now than it was when I was 15. Actually, ironically enough, some of the issues I'm still dealing with is the same bullshit I was dealing with when I was a kid too.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily change, but you know, your life evolves, things get, you know, a little more gray and there's more depth and variety of aspects of your life. There's new highs, there's new lows.
It's like some things can be demystified a little bit, even though you don't have them completely figured out.
For sure. Yeah. And you know, just because you've become older doesn't necessarily mean that you've become any less angry about things around you. If anything, yeah, I think I'm a little more on edge than I probably was when I was a kid.
We have your own children now.
I would disagree. Well, I didn't know you then, but I would disagree.
Well, yeah,
you're much less on edge than you were, say, 10 years ago.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a little different.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for as long as you guys have been together, you can officially say you've grown up together. So.
It's pretty weird.
It's a different, I guess it's like a different kind of intensity. It's not, back then it was probably a little childish and a little immature.
I think that there was some dysfunction on everybody's parts.
We were just psychos.
We were crazy people for a little while.
And Nate was saying that you've got another child on the way, right?
I do, I'm a second on the way.
And five kids between all the band members now, is that right?
Gonna be six.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, you know, kids are a blast, you know?
Excellent. Yeah, punk rock fatherhood is a pretty common thing these days. And I was just,
it's weird. We went from zero kids to
in a couple years.
I think about this all the time. It's crazy to me that our last record is older than all of our kids.
Yeah, it's fucking true. That's really crazy.
That's bizarre.
Never really thought about that.
Yeah, to go back to the question you just asked, that, like, how do you keep going?
It's right.
Like, you don't really have much of a choice. Tomorrow's coming. So, you know, you can either lay in bed and suck your thumb, or you can get up and do something. It's probably more fun to do something.
It's fun to do something. Make music, make art, and do something positive, you know?
Definitely. Being that you guys were just talking about all the children coming into your lives, this is probably not too smart of a question, but I was going to ask what you do during your obligation-free time when you're not traveling or playing
obligation-free time.
If there is such a thing. And
it's really difficult, to be honest. Like, I'm addicted to work. I pretty much always have been in some way, especially being an entrepreneur and just, you know, working, making art and, you know, promoting music and releasing music for a living, I guess. You know, if you look at it, I have three professional jobs. And so that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to maintain those things and to do those things and to undertake all the projects that I want to undertake. I have a list every day I make, and I feel like a failure when I look at it and I've done 6 of the 12 things on the list, you know, right. but I add every night and I keep going and I keep going. There's always something that I want to do.
Excellent.
So there's really isn't that much downtime. I do work less where I used to do, you know, like 10 or 12 hour, you know, days regularly without days off for years. You know, like I'm not talking like for a year, for 6 months, I'm talking like, you know, 7-8 years. If I wasn't, cause I'd work at home, you know, so it didn't matter. I would just work. If I'm awake, I'm working. If I wasn't walking a dog or something, or like going to get a coffee, I'm working. Now having a child and trying to have some sort of normalcy and trying to have a healthy life in that regard, I'm trying to slow down and really be focused in those times. So I, you know, give myself my 8 hours a day to slam through work and really try to accomplish as much art and music and things that I want to work on in those times. But it's, there isn't much downtime.
Yeah, I can imagine. You sound like a very driven guy. That's great.
Well, I mean, what choice do I have? You know, like what choice do any of us have, really?
It's like you were saying, you know, you don't want to stay in bed and suck your thumb, you know, you just,
Thing is, nobody else is going to do it for me. You know what I mean? Like, and it's all about just, you know, just putting out things, making things. Nobody, if it's all self-derived, nobody can do that for me.
Excellent.
I had the most downtime I've ever had, you know, like just a few weeks ago, and I took a week and I just made art and music only without distraction. So really, was that downtime? You know, if I was just, I locked myself in a place pretty much. I was in seclusion for a week, and it was fantastic and some of the most, you know, at least for me, like prolific time of making as much stuff as possible. So I don't know, but that was really enjoyable to me. I came out relaxed.
Sounds productive and healing at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Excellent.
Cool. Nate, what about you? I steamrolled you.
Who cares what I do?
He does a lot of stuff.
I think these guys
care. Like, there's always, you know, some sort of musical project that I'm trying to work on.
Yeah, you've got Old Man Gloom. Is there anything else? Or
Doom Riders.
Oh, that yes, Doom Riders.
There's all these other projects that I keep putting on the back burner that I'm supposed to go record tracks for. And
there's some cool ones, too.
Yeah. like another split cranium record. Shit, what else? I'm completely blanking right now. But there's that. I mean, I'm really focusing on spending time, like when I'm not busy. I've been really focusing on trying to be a good dad. You know, like
he's a good dad.
Oh, thanks. But, well, you know, it's
I could see that you guys are good parents. I work with children actually, and I can just tell. I can, you know, you can just sort of tell who were like the type of people who were good with kids.
Well, thank
you know,
you
so
very
yeah.
Much. I think, and this isn't a negative thing. This is a thought that I've had recently. Is like our generation. I think our parents, in their mind, the idea of being a good parent, and like you know, really doing right by their kids. Was working all the time and providing.
Right.
And like, and that's why, you know, you had kids who were latchkey kids growing up. And like, I think as I've gotten older, I realized I probably would have valued spending more time with my parents.
Yeah.
Than, you know,
I would certainly agree with
taking
that.
Taking a trip to Disney World or something, or like getting a new bike, I probably would have been more psyched to, you know, spend time with them. So,
excellent.
That, I mean, and but I'm not saying anything negative about
not judging.
Yeah, about my right. parents. Like, my parents were great.
Yeah, every generation has its different way of doing things, yeah. for sure. So.
But so it made me really kind of cognizant of that, and like, okay, I actually want to be here,
right?
And like, you know, have a relationship with.
It's a beautiful experience.
Very cool. Very cool. It sounds like you guys have got the balance figured out between the music and the art and raising your children.
No. I don't think anybody does. Man.
Yeah.
The balance
you can learn
is,
along the way. Yeah.
It's just a constant.
The balance is just awareness about anything in life. No matter what you do, it's like you're going to always make mistakes and fuck up things and not give things enough time or give other things more time than you should. But it's just all about awareness and self-correction.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Before I turn the questions over to any folks out here, or just any bands that you guys are especially excited about in this day and age. I know you both have shared that you're really into what's happening in this day and age, and any particular bands that you guys have really been loving lately.
Well, we were just talking about the new Occulta Karate record.
Okay.
It's, I mean, I've only heard two songs, but it's fucking awesome. Those two songs are awesome. I'm like super excited about that. We took them on a short tour in Europe. Like
a few years ago, 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
Okay.
Great band.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, I mean, whenever someone asks me that, my mind just goes
It's tough. I mean, we're playing with Vol today, and like that record's brilliant. That record blew my doors off when that came out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in that band, you got Mike from Yob, you got the dude from Hammers of Misfortune. I mean, like,
yeah, we were just talking about Hammers of Misfortune. That was like a sleeper band that, you know, more people should be paying attention to. You know, their catalog, they're a brilliant band that really blew me away the first time I heard them, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and they're still doing things now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, I think probably my favorite album of this year so far is the Savages album.
You're really into that record.
Yeah, yeah, you're really into that.
No, yeah, you actually turned me onto the White Lung record too.
Oh yeah, White Lung.
Oh, yeah,
and yeah, the new White Lung record's really good. I started getting into that record quite a bit. You know, I have a label, so I try not to be like the salesman. So like, oh, I have this cool record coming out, you know, but we're doing some really interesting things there and working with some great bands that I personally believe in. And, I encourage people to check that stuff out
for that new Oathbreaker record.
It's a great record.
And the new Planes Mistaken for Stars.
That's a great record as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm sure they'll be getting lots of listening. That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent. So yeah, I think the way we're going to set up things now is if anyone has a question for the band,
hey guys, hate to interrupt, but I gotta tell you about the other shows on our Last Chance Podcast Network. Mondays, Rick Augie interviews bands from all over and gets a scoop on what's going on in and around your area with LC Does Your Scene. Tuesdays, Mikey and myself talk science and technology on all things popped. We tell you all the things you never knew you never needed to know. Wednesdays, Sean and Alex chat while trying new and old favorite beverages on I'll Have What He's Having. Thursdays, it's back to All Things Pop with Mikey and myself, and we talk more science and technology. Fridays, we have a great show called Netflix, where we watch the movies on Netflix that you're kind of unsure about, and we report back. We do the dirty work so you don't have to. Saturdays, John Skinner talks to local and college theater performers about shows they are working on and stuff from their past. Get in touch with the inner theater nerd you have with Q to Q. Finally, every Sunday, we have Ascending the Holy Mountain, hosted by Holy Mountain Printing, where the team talks to artists, musicians, filmmakers, and friends about their creative endeavors and life experiences. We have you covered every day of the week, so be sure to learn more about these shows and subscribe to them on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher over at LastChancePodcastNetwork.com. And while we have you over there, go ahead and scroll to the bottom and subscribe to our newsletter so we can keep you in the know of all our happenings. Anyways, now back to the show.
If you feel that you're awkward out there and don't want to ask a question, we're just as awkward.
Yeah.
Look at us.
It's weird, yeah.
There's more you than there are us.
Okay. I'm in a band without boring you with details. We try to do the DIY thing. There are forks in that road where mm-hmm. it seems like the easiest thing to do would be to do the thing that would make you successful and the thing to keep doing what you love. I don't ever want to not play people's houses. I don't ever want there to be like a moment where I play a place and I look at it and I'm just like, I don't feel like I belong here. Was there ever like a pivotal moment where you guys were like a DIY band and you knew just like, this isn't going to be like this forever? Because it scares me to think of that. But at the same time, it's also exciting.
Well, okay, like the walking into a club and feeling like you don't belong there thing. I still have those moments,
right.
But you make yourself belong. You know, you just walk in, you're like, fuck this. This is ours. This is our show. These are our fans who are like, you know.
Or not. And that actually makes it more exciting.
Yeah, then it's like, fuck you. We're going to really make
it. Let's really work for this, you know?
Yeah,
like, we've had plenty of middle finger crowds like that, you know?
Man,
it's the best.
I saw y'all play with Mastodon and Death Clock.
Perfect example.
I may have been one of 10 people and like easily like a 20,000 capacity place. It was
I'd
in Norfolk,
like
Virginia.
One in eight. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that was at the...
It was at
the Norva.
The Norva.
Yeah, that's like...
No
Norva's
one
big.
Gave a shit about y'all.
No, I'm really.
No. But, I'm sorry. But maybe 20 of us.
No, actually...
Everyone was there in corpse paint for Death Clock.
The way we looked at that tour was really interesting. We were actually going to do a tour ourselves, and we were talking to High and Fire about going with us, and our friends Mastodon took the offer to do a tour with Death Clock, and we've already toured with Mastodon a few times. And so they were like, hey, why don't we all tour together? What was interesting is that the chemistry of that tour, everyone got along, but it really seemed like it was High on Fire and Converge were playing a show together. And even when High on Fire played, it seemed like people were apprehensive about them until Matt Pike ripped the solo. And then when there was something like really...
Yeah,
and people would just go nuts.
Yeah,
when
it would
be
funny because the doors would open and people would just run to
They would
the
make them start
and literally
as doors
like,
were
I'm
opening.
My spot here for Death Clock. And then... They'd literally just put their head down on their arm and wait.
Yeah.
And like until Matt ripped a solo and they'd be like, yeah! Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This part sucks.
And then it was like Mastodon were opening for Death Clock. And Death Clock are, you know, they're an anomaly. That's their own world. They're not really a band that's sort of like a, because being a cartoon is sort of like this weird subcultural phenomenon, you know? So we knew that was going to be a challenge. Mm. Some nights were a lot harder than others.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of who was there for you, I mean, you brought it, Les. Everyone's
there.
That's
what you just play. It's fun.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I've taken out of what you've done. I'm like, I hate to hog the mic, but I mean, it's
it's good.
Super tight.
No,
when's my next opportunity?
No, hogging. It's good.
Just to kind of answer your question about like playing in houses and like, and you know, growing beyond that, like. I still love playing house shows. It got to a point where, you know, we realized like we're actually being exclusionary by doing this. There's people who want to see us play who don't know or can't get in because there's not enough room. And like, you know, at some point you have to just be like, all right, we can do this ethically. We can do this and like have control over it and make sure that people are still, you know, having a good time and being respected at our shows, you know, and like that can be very difficult sometimes,
right. Especially in 2016 when, like, you know, the club world is dominated by large business and there's a lot of sort of barriers, business barriers that come into play there, and physical barriers
lots of physical barriers,
you know, so it becomes a bit difficult. But yeah, you know, we'd play a house show if the circumstances worked out,
right?
You know there, I'm thinking about like one of the last house shows we played was in Long Island. The night before, we played Irving Plaza with Hatebreed and Glassjaw, like a few thousand people, and then we played a house show the next morning. Remember, we played the basement.
Oh, it's Sean from Most Precious Blood's house.
Yeah, in his mom's basement.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Maybe. Yeah, and it was just funny to do that, and you know, like we had fun doing it, but it was just like funny to think about the juxtaposition of audiences and, you know, and what they represented. Yeah, but you know, just do your thing, you know, and if it feels wrong, don't do it. If something feels wrong to us, we get offers for shit all the time that we just say, no way.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
There's things that roam the wrong way, and I just...
Yeah,
no, I get it. And like, I mean, the other thing that you have to think about is the way that you measure success. What is success to you?
Mm-hmm.
Success to me is just being able to keep doing what we want to do. You know, I don't really care about how many people come to our shows or how much...
If one dude comes to me and says that was rad, that's...
Yes,
that's pretty much it. Yeah,
that's pretty killer.
And how do you feel after you play? Do you feel like it was a cathartic thing? Then that's it. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's all that matters, man.
The only other like colder advice I would have too is when it comes to being a DIY band, really educate yourself as to what that means, especially in 2016, because a lot of stuff that you think is DIY now isn't fucking DIY. You know, and there's a lot of big business tied to a variety of things. Some stuff is avoidable. Some stuff isn't avoidable.
Yeah. Pressing vinyl.
Well, I mean, you're going to have, I mean, no, they're all big companies, know, but you know, distributing records, digital platforms, you know, what you're using, how you're using it, who you're paying.
Right.
Just try to be aware of those things. And it's always evolving and always changing. And sometimes things can be, you know, as clean as you want them to be. Sometimes they can't be. But just, you know, do your best as a band to be aware of those things.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
That was an excellent question and brought up some great conversation. Is anyone else out there who'd like to talk to Jacob and Nate?
Come on. Not just one. You can ask stupid shit.
Yeah, anything.
Please ask stupid shit.
Please ask stupid shit.
You guys want to buy me some McDonald's after?
I don't want to support McDonald's. Are you kidding me?
All right. I can dig that.
You know?
I'll buy you something at the Whole Foods Hot Bar.
Now, I will take that offer.
Cool.
Yeah. All right.
Anyone else want to hit them up for anything?
Yeah, all right. Good. Cool. Good.
There we go.
Yeah,
we're breaking the ice here. Come on.
There's no cameras, so it's just your voice.
So he kind of touched on this earlier, but you guys were you were talking about how you liked a lot of the AMRAP bands.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I saw a flyer of like one of your old shows where you played with like Neurosis and Unsane and Caden and Coalesce.
I booked that show. Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Could you tell me something about that? Like how was
it? Sure. That was 1998.
98.
And the reason why that show happened was that Neurosis were coming to the East Coast to play CMJ Festival in New York, and they needed another show, and so they reached out, the Relapse guys reached out, who actually Gordon Conrad, who is now the label manager at Season of Mist, he runs that label. He's an old friend of mine, and actually he used to help out Converge before Converge. Converge worked with Relapse briefly on one split, but he was always really generous with us. He was really good. Yeah. He was, he did a lot for just guiding us. And when we were especially younger, trying to navigate the waters that we were just talking about, actually, you know, figuring out what's independent, what's not, what makes sense and whatever. But yeah, so he brought the idea to the table and said, would you like to promote the show and do it? We partnered with our booking agent now that we've essentially had since we started, our old roadie. And we put together this monster of a show that was, let's see who was on that show. I believe
Dillinger.
Dillinger. Yeah, it was right. Dillinger Escape Plan, Nile.
Caven.
Coalesce. Yeah. Unsane.
Origin.
No, not Origin.
No,
it was Nile was the metal band on it.
I can't remember.
Ourselves and Neurosis, yeah, right? And I think we had even a cancellation. That's why I even got. I think that's why maybe Dillinger. No, maybe that's why
Dillinger was there.
Yeah, they were there. But yeah, it was a monster of a show. We had about 1,200 plus people in this gymnasium, and I lost like $100 because it was a really expensive show to do, yeah, and we were just excited.
It ran over time. I remember Neurosis having to cut songs.
Yeah, that was like, ugly. Yeah,
and then I remember the lights coming on at the end of their set while they were still playing, and they just kept going.
They just kept going. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But it was it was a really phenomenal show, and it was just really great to be part of that show and be able to do it. I think that was pretty much the last show I booked. I booked a few Converge related shows, and I did a couple of Overcast shows too in around that time in the Boston area. That was pretty much it. I just didn't really. Being a promoter is weird, you know. I also did a Crowbar Soylent Green I Hate God show too. That was pretty much it. But they were all fun to do. It was fun to be part of something and, you know, get bands out there that I cared about, you know. So it was great to do it. Yeah, it was a monster of a show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I really love Unsane, and I've always kind of thought.
Me too.
I've always kind of thought you guys had like sort of. Maybe like some influences from like the AMRF stuff.
Oh, huge. Actually, our sound man only wears Unsane shirts. I'm not even kidding. Literally. Unsane shirt for the last like 15 years we've been working together. That's all he wears. But yeah, we're massive fans of the
band. Yeah, I mean, if you could like separate all the tracks on our records and just listen to my bass tracks, you would hear a lot of
There's a lot of Unsane in there.
I can definitely tell just from.
And do you ever get into. Any other related Unsane stuff too? If you ever search out the Cutthroats 9 records, a lot of people aren't familiar with those records, but they're brilliant.
King's record is really good.
That's good too. Yeah, and then new record that the UXO record that he did with Steve. That's good too.
Yeah,
sweet.
Right on.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
That was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Right on.
Anything else in this hot box? No. Oh yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Hello.
All right. So as far as like. The music writing side of Converge.
Mm-hmm.
How do y'all like approach that? Because with my band, we're all such good friends, which I'm assuming everyone in your band is all close friends. We like start writing. We're like, yeah, all right, we got a badass riff. Let's go off this. 30 minutes later, we're all just laughing and not focused anymore.
That happens.
That happens.
So is it like, what do you guys, as far as that, dude, do you guys like come as a group and write or write individually and then come together and
good question.
Every song's different, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, like sometimes it's like you said, sometimes it's just, hey, I got this riff. Let's jam and see what happens. And sometimes I have this complete song. Here's your part. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes
one of us will do that and it's a disaster. Yeah. And we do completely dissect a song on the spot and just basically rebuild a song. We've done that many times too.
Yeah. And I mean, we have the riff bank where, you know, we couldn't figure out what to do with a riff. And so we'll just file it away until the next time.
There's plenty of riffs that come together where you're like, that's great, but we can't figure out a transition. We can't figure out a way to get in and out of it to make this work for now. Our brains are tired. You know, we're kind of fried. Our brains are just shredded. We've been in this room too long. Let's take a break and we'll revisit it. And yeah, that's the riff bank. And that's where a lot of demos kind of come together. And, you know, it's funny. It's like we've been demoing material off and on for a couple of years. We have like a bunch of riff bank stuff going on right now. And I went back and listened to it. And a lot of stuff is a lot better now to me than it was the first time we did it, at least in terms of connecting with me, you know?
Yeah, well, when you're like just writing something and then you record it and you listen to it right then and like you've got it in your mind, like, I don't know if I like that part. When you kind of forget it. And go back and
you go, that's
ears,
a great
like,
riff.
Oh man, I didn't hear that way before.
And so we all bring ideas to the table like that. Nate's brought full songs or, you know, close to full songs. Kurt as well. I usually, if I bring a musical idea, it's usually a basic riff idea because I'm a hack when it comes to guitar and bass. I can just kind of like be like, this is what I want it to sound like this band. And they go, okay. And then try to figure it out.
Yeah.
Ben's actually, has brought drum riff ideas to the table too, and has had a fill or beat idea and said, can we try to build something around this? And we do it.
But Ben's like a crazy drum robot too, though. You can be like, all right, I have this idea for a drum beat behind this riff. And what's the time signature? And you'll throw some crazy time signature at him and he'll play it. And then you're just like, no, but your left hand's going to hit this while your right hand does this. And like, he'll just be like, oh, like this. And you're like, how did you do that?
And then add like the fill from this random song. And then he'll do the fill
in the middle of Achilles' Last Stand.
Yeah. Do it right here. You know, while your feet do this. And he tries it a couple. All right, I got it. And, you know, and then we do it and it all comes together. Sometimes it's a train wreck too. So
yeah. A lot of times.
A lot of times. Yeah.
Most of the time it's a train wreck.
Yeah. So there's no formulaic way to do it. Mm-hmm. Whatever works for the dynamics of the personalities in your band. And also being respectful of the people. Like we are intensely sarcastic and mean to each other. And all we do is joke when we're in a room. Everything is... I would say there's a joke every minute when we're all together, and just like you guys, and you just laugh the entire time. And it's usually at somebody's expense. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, but there's a level of respect.
Yes, exactly.
With, you know, you bringing something musically for us to try and work with, and it's like, okay,
yeah,
yes, I trust you musically. I want to hear what you've got to say, but at the same time, there's a level of respect going the opposite direction where it's like, if I give you this riff, like if I bring a riff and you guys tear it apart, I know that that's coming from an honest place.
It's
where
from
we
love.
All want the same goal. Yes. You know, it's not like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
I'm taking my
you're
ball
not gonna
and going home.
You're not
going
to eviscerate, you know, Rodney's riff because he's Rodney. You just want to like shit on him for the day.
I mean, it's like to quote Almost Famous, be honest and unmerciful.
Totally. It makes the best song.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks for asking.
What else do we have? All right.
Hello.
Hi. So to kind of piggyback off of that question, can you talk a little bit about the lyric writing process? Like not only from like how you generate melodies and the sound that you want to get vocally, but taking like whatever angst or feelings that you're having and turning them into content for the songs.
I got this one.
You got it. No, hey, well, you do it for Doom Riders, you know, and it's hard. It's fucking hard. There's a lot of ways to approach it. I write all the time. I write when I feel like writing, when I feel emotionally compelled to write or make art. I'm an expressive person like that. So I write songs without thinking about song structure or assigning them to music. I just kind of write things as prose. And then when we start writing as a band, I still may be doing that process while we're musically writing. And then I might remember a line that I wrote or something like that, or I might be reminded by a riff, for example, and go, hey, you know what? That might work really well here. The phrasing could work for this.
Yeah, like the pattern works with how many syllables, you know, that
actually like the song like Aimless Arrow is like a really good example. Like that was written pretty much, it was written and performed as I wrote it, and it fit with the riff. And I remember when the first time I heard the riff, I said, well, that's pretty much the same cadence of what I'm trying to go for here. And it has essentially the same, you know, like verse count as what I'm going for, what I've written, you know, with very minor edits or something like that. And it really worked well for the content of the song and what I was trying to convey. As far as content goes, like, you know, I just write about my life and things that I've gone through and I'm going, usually things that I'm going through. I'm not that reflective in terms of, looking, retrospectively at my life. Maybe in terms of putting it on a current experience that I'm going through or something like that. But more often than not, it's about that moment. So, you know, the latest record is usually the closest thing to emotionally where I am at that particular point in time. It actually makes it kind of interesting too, when you're somebody who's making music and, you know, playing songs, people ask you to play old songs all the time. You might not be as connected emotionally to that song. So you kind of does a few things when you play it live. You kind of have to revisit that place a little bit. and kind of go back into it a little bit. And sometimes you kind of get lost in your head and reapply those lyrics to the moments in your life that you're going through now.
Yeah, you kind of find a new meaning.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's a different kind of internalization process that goes on.
In terms of composition, we didn't always keep lyrics in mind.
No.
When we were writing music.
And they're assholes like that.
Yeah, well, that's something that we've tried to become much more aware of when writing, you know, like,
I need a breath somewhere.
Yeah. Well, sometimes. Not only that, like, you know, this would be a good place for lyrics or for vocals. So maybe we should start thinking about how you're going to want to sing this song, and then we can kind of work around that. And that actually helps.
It does.
With writing,
it helps unify things quite a bit, because otherwise, as a vocalist, you'll approach something and be like really phonetic, and like you'll just be like really just everything's just like on the beat because you have no choice.
Yeah. Well, I feel like when you hear a lot of younger hardcore bands, that's
exactly what that is,
because it's like the guitarist, here's the songs, here's the riffs, this is how it goes, sing.
And then and so you just hear, it's just basically the mouthing of the riff just going over and over again. So yeah, we try to avoid that because it's not that interesting. And there's more stuff.
I mean,
it
helps me and Kurt when actually, you know, putting riffs together, because it's like, okay, now I know what you want to do, and we can kind of shape this thing together. And
for sure.
Functions,
because we also hear things a lot differently since I'm thinking as a vocalist, and like Nate's a vocalist in his other bands, but it's still very different in terms of how I would approach
I'm not a vocalist that's playing an instrument, so
exactly, like,
I'm looking
different.
For the easiest place to sing.
Yes, a guitarist that's playing generally and singing, they're looking to fill, they almost like leave space. A lot of them will leave space to sing, even though it might not be that apparent. They'll simplify something at that particular point in time. I'm looking at it in a way different way than they are, so
I just say
always write, you know, and I've never been really good at writing with a deadline, you know. So if it's like, hey, you know, we have this record that's, I know records that are like really like legitimately important hardcore punk records that bands were in the studio cramming to get there to get it done at the very last second, you know, and I never want to be in that spot. You know, I'd rather be looking at everything I've made over a few years' time and trying to make it work in the context.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Right on.
Is everyone dying in the heat out there?
Anybody else?
Anyone like to speak?
Come
on.
Good shirt.
Thanks, man. So how do you know when a song is like completed? Like, is it something where everyone is 100% confident in it, or do you have
that's
to put
a really
stuff
good question too?
Not everyone's totally down for. And also, when you play it live,
I'm gonna say something controversial there.
Let's hear it.
Your thing.
Yeah, when you play it like a new song live, for example, do you ever regret a choice you made or didn't make?
Constantly.
Yes.
Yes.
All the time.
I could go through our set tonight and sit down with you and listen to the records and point out to you how I do things differently now, and I could say I wish that I had thought of that before we recorded it. You know.
Yeah, that, and a lot of that happens because the way we tend to record is, you know, the song is, you know, finished and crafted, then we go, okay, cool, let's document it. I think we're ready to roll, and we just do it.
Yeah.
There's strengths to that, there's positives to that, but then there's a lot of negatives to that too, because you don't necessarily work out a lot of those kinks. I would say a record that we probably did work that out the most was the You Fail Me album, where we played a lot of those songs for a very, very long time because we were having all these other like non-musical issues that we were dealing with the band. So we couldn't release the record that fast or record that fast. So
we toured a crap load on those songs.
We did. We played a lot of those songs, especially You Fail Me, the song, almost like how Rollins Band would have played it. It was a jam. You know, it didn't really have a definitive beginning or end. It free flowed a lot. And there's a lot of weird versions of it that were kind of cool that we did. And so I'm going to say that songs are never really finished. If a band is still playing a song, just like Nate said, the riffs might change. We might start playing something live at a different speed a little bit. We'll never omit parts. We're never a band that will be like, fuck that, we're going to play this part four times because we played it too long before. We still play it the way we recorded it. But other things will change.
We're talking about interpretations then.
That's interpretations, yes.
Not necessarily the
composition. Not the full composition,
like,
no.
I think sometimes we put out a record with there'll be a song on it that I'm like, I fucking hate this song. Like, I can't believe we put this on our record. But, you know, there's four people in this band and, you know, you have to compromise. And sometimes we finish a song and we're like, fuck, yes, we're done. Yeah. Sometimes we're like, like it? I fucking love it.
Okay.
Well, I hate it. I think it's all right. Yeah. Whatever. It's done then.
Well, that comes down to band dynamics. We're talking about band stuff earlier. Yeah. Writing, just knowing things about, just knowing the chemistry of your band. We are a true democracy in our band. So, we vote.
Yeah.
You know, like not like vote, like hand up, you know, like shitty voting, but like it's every opinion matters. And so if three of us say, no, this is cool, we're cool with this, and this is the way we want to roll with this particular song, then it's done.
Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes you have to look at it less like as just looking at this one song. You have to look at the body of music that you're making
for sure
for an album, and you're like, okay, well, where is this going to fit in all of this? And
that opens up a whole nother can of worms, too.
But, you know, like crafting an album is basically like crafting a song out of songs.
Exactly.
And so you really have to keep that in mind.
And you're all there for the same reason, to make something great, you know? And so to remember
to
that
something mediocre.
Mediocre. Well, great to you, you know? And like in terms of what's success? Success to us is making something that, you know, moves us and is powerful to us that we feel confident about, you know? We don't give a shit about how many records it's going to sell or whatever.
You can't care about how many records you're going to sell now. Just a silly.
Or like how it's going to appeal to people, what people that are supporters of your band think. You know, it's irrelevant. If you're happy, you're happy. That's pretty much all it comes down to. So songs, I don't know. You don't really know when you're done. I just think that like they're always evolving. I think we always play stuff a little bit differently live because you have to, physical limitations.
It's fun when you listen to live recordings of, you know, songs that we've recorded 15 years ago, and you're like, wow, we really do that differently now.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. So that's the weird non-answer to your question.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Anything else, guys, ladies, anyone? Yes.
Oh, all right. Step up.
For you guys, what is the seminal Converge album in your mind?
For me, there's no seminal Converge record. It's just, you know, the newest record is always the most like artistically relevant to me, and the most sort of like in tune with me. Music is like such a subjective thing, you know. Everybody's gonna like have a record. You have a Peter Story shirt on. Terrifier is my jam, sure. You know. Except that I love, you know, the end of Prowl in the Yard. You know what I mean? Like, so do I take one record over the other? Yeah, I just don't. I just look at it all as sort of like one big body. And
musically, I can't pick one. I would agree with Jake. Like, whatever our most recent one is like usually musically my favorite. I can say that as far as just kind of how I nostalgically look back at our records, You Fail Me might be my favorite one, because I feel like that's when we really clicked as a band.
We clicked. We also overcame a lot of fucking obstacles that I think would have buried a lot of other bands. We were dealing with a lot of bullshit at that point in time, not internally, just like external bullshit. Like that, like I've seen that kind of stuff. I've seen like business stuff and label stuff burn bands out and ruin bands, and they just stop. They lose their enthusiasm, and we just kind of put our heads down and persevered in our weird way, and it brought us closer together and kind of made us the unit that's been together for 15, 16 years.
And I think, like, people always like to talk about Jane Doe as being like this groundbreaking record. And I mean, I think whatever you want to think about Jane Doe, I'm proud of it. I think it's a good record. But like, I feel like creatively and musically, You Fail Me was more where we...
It was more us.
It was more us, but it was where we kind of set a precedent where it was like, we're not going to do what you think we're supposed to do. You know, like, I don't know. I feel like people expected like a very different follow-up to Jane Doe, and You Fail Me was a curveball in a lot of ways, sonically, like the way we wrote the songs. It was much less like
we also
spastic, metallic hardcore.
Would you say that we also felt totally comfortable in throwing a curveball too, like where we were like, you know what, as a collective character, like we no longer give any shits about anything.
Yeah,
you know, and that was like, that was a big sort of maturation point for our band.
And I feel like right around the time of Jane Doe was kind of when a lot of hardcore and stuff from our little realm started getting press and started showing up in like these bigger metal magazines, and it was like, this is what you are in the magazines, like,
for sure,
this is a metalcore band, they're the blah 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 blah, and like lumping us in with all these bands, and like all those bands are fine, you know, nothing against any of them, but I just remember being like, fuck you, man. That's not what we are. You don't know shit about us.
It's like being a zebra and just someone calling you a horse.
Yeah.
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 And you're just like, nope, I'm a zebra.
I'm going to shit like a zebra now.
Watch
smell
this.
It.
This is a zebra. And you're like, no, we're not, you know, making fun of you horses.
Yeah.
But we're a zebra.
Horses are cool.
You're cool.
We're zebras.
Donkeys, you're cool. Mule, you're cool too. We're a zebra.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Thank you. That was a good analogy.
Thank you. I just fucking fucked up brain. No? Come on. No?
Everyone's like, they're just gonna fucking,
they're like, it's
keep
so hot.
It's hot in here.
Stop. Fucking Jesus.
Awesome. All right. Well, everybody, thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for being here, guys. Really appreciate it.
Give a round of applause for these guys.
Yes.
For you guys.
That's right.
Thanks so much for being here in North Carolina and doing this, and have an awesome show tonight at Hopscotch. I know we're all looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for toughing it out through this. It really means a lot that all of you came.
Yeah,
and
this is really
so
cool, man.
Right on.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. We're psyched to be here. So, right on. Cool.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Sweet.